Good evening. I'm Heather Brown, and this is Between the Covers. Vancouver writer Timothy Taylor tantalizes the senses as he takes us into the world of cheesemaking in his story, Pope's Own. The woman at the heart of the story is Gillian Mackin. She runs a specialty cheese shop, but she's not really happy selling exotic food to upscale clients. She's an ex-stockbroker and an ex-wife. And as far as Gillian's concerned, it's time to get involved in something tangible. At the urging of an acquaintance, she finds herself in Ireland, bidding on a very secret and very exclusive dairy.
Clooney showed up the next morning, as agreed. On the driveway, hearing the gravel crunch underfoot, Gillian had a sudden awareness of her movement across the ground, of the microscopic trace mark she left on the great green back of Ireland. She climbed into his red Fiesta. Then, self-conscious about her own silence and the gyroscopic sensation that remained in her, she looked around the tight interior of the car and said, "Cozy." "It'll get you there and back again," Clooney said, snugging the seatbelt around his waist. "And to various undisclosed destinations," she said.
"Indeed."
"Your turn," Gillian said, as Clooney swung the Fiesta onto the narrow road. He accelerated quickly, shifting into second and then third, as they roared toward the crest of a hill, tall stone walls flying by very close on either side. Clooney was a bit of a pioneer in these parts, it seemed. A connoisseur, celebrating the culinary output of the country long before it was fashionable, and for more years than he claimed to remember. Handmade pâté from farms in Kerry, walnut oil from Wicklow, cheese from every county in the Republic, all out of a tiny shop in Ireland's gourmet capital, south of Cork City.
"3 years only to foreigners," Clooney said.
"Or restaurants where foreigners like to eat. That was Kinsale. And now?" "Well, now even the Irish are fancying finer things," Clooney said, managing to sound disapproving of the national success story that he embodied. An odd gourmet, she thought. Country lanky, with the simple faith revealed by that unconscious finger to the vest pocket.
"So I was approved," Gillian tried. They were skimming through the hills, deeper into the green and gold of West Cork, towards Brothers.
"Well," Clooney said a little dry,
"you've made the short list."
"List?" Gillian said, feigning alarm.
"How short?"
Clooney did not answer. In Skibbereen, he shifted all the way down to first. The streets were clogged and sprouted from one another at odd angles.
"Why don't you buy Brothers?"
she asked, when they were pulling out into the country again a few moments later.
"I'm not eligible," Clooney said. "I suppose I'm also too old for a new game entirely."
"Well, look at me," Gillian said. Clooney smiled.
"I have already. I think you're very young indeed."
"What do you mean, eligible?" she asked again. Clooney didn't answer this one. He didn't seem ready to take a risk on her. Outside, the countryside was spilling past, fragrant, verdant.
"Can we talk about the cheese?" she asked him. "Pope's Own from Brothers Farm?"
Clooney didn't say no.
"Washed, rind, semi-soft?"
"It is that."
"Like anything I've tried?" Gillian asked.
"Perhaps a bit like more beer," Clooney said, "but different as well."
"And how is it I had never heard of Pope's Own before Chekhov told me about it?" she pushed.
Clooney stopped the car on the shoulder just then, so close to a stone wall she couldn't have opened the car door. He produced a black handkerchief from the glove compartment in front of her knees.
"You won't have heard of it because it's never been for sale before," he said.
He raised the black handkerchief towards her eyes. She tried to treat it lightly.
"This is all very dramatic, isn't it?"
"I'm sorry," Clooney said, from quite close, his hands now behind her head.
"But if you do not buy the farm, the seller does not wish its location revealed." He smelled just faintly of soap and bacon. Not unpleasant in total, but even as he tied the kerchief in place so gently, Jillian had to fight a surging impulse to tear the thing from her eyes. The car began to roll again. The breeze came through the window and her breathing slowed. They were on pavement for a short time, then on a rougher surface, perhaps gravel, whereupon she found herself shifting this way and that in her seat, once jostling to the right and rubbing shoulders with Clooney himself. He wasn't telling her what he knew, Jillian thought, and that told her something else entirely. Pope's own, it sounds like a racehorse. Chekhov put his hands flat together as he thought of it. There's nothing in the world quite like this cheese, he said finally. Golden paste, like the sun on Derby morning. A trace of purple runs through the center, like the blood of the Republic itself. Why Pope's own? Chekhov came out of his reverie. Because Brother's farm is owned by the church at the moment, that's why. His balding holiness and a crimson gang of cardinals can eat every wheel of it. Jillian understood finally. How did that ever come about? She asked. Chekhov frowned as he thought about how to answer. I understand, he said finally, that Brother's was given to the church over 30 years ago by an elderly cheesemaker who had seen a vision to the effect that this was what God wished of him. Crazy. I shan't disagree with you on that score. And why would the Vatican be selling Brother's now? Chekhov seemed to lose interest suddenly. I can only imagine they have their divinely inspired reasons. So, cheese aficionados from all over the world are descending on West Cork for the first ever taste of... Chekhov cut her off. It won't be like that at all. They have a man, Clooney. He will arrange a very quiet sale. And why me? Why not yourself? Just get to Clooney, Chekhov said. Tell him only who you are and that I have sent you. That's it? You might also try Matthew 13:45 on him, in a pinch. A religious man, our Clooney. And then he recited it for her. It seems a little cheap, Jillian frowned. I can't say things I don't believe. Oh, certainly you can, Chekhov said. It feels so good when you stop. She jostled against Clooney as they rounded a bend. He joked with her dryly. Just another kilometer or so. Would you like anything to read? They stopped a few minutes later. The tires had just changed tone from the conversational scratch and ping of gravel to the hollow rumble of a stone drive. She heard a gate close behind them. When the black kerchief came off, she was blinded. She climbed out of the Fiesta, holding the door, and blinked into the splintering halos of blue that fizzed on her retina. And then her new surroundings slowly rose to her vision. She was in a small courtyard in front of a tall house, stone, with blue wood shutters and a slate roof with many chimneys. There were rose bushes flurrying over the lattices that had been built along the side walls. There were some farm trucks parked against a hedge opposite, a garden bordering a cobblestone drive, a narrow walkway that disappeared towards the farmyard. And rising behind the house in a broad, calm sweep, there was an expanse of green pasture that stretched up to the far ridge line. When she pulled her eyes away from all of this, she saw that there was another man there, standing with Clooney on the far side of the car. Meet Fergal, our foreman, Clooney said. Fergal, this is Miss Mackin. She rounded the car to shake hands with Fergal, who grinned widely. Just working the morning milk now, Fergal said, motioning them to follow him. He led them past the courtyard to the nearest building in the yard, and here, before their bags even came out of the car, they stood at the low doorway, and Jillian could see the large table vats where the milk was being coagulated over steam heat. Half a dozen women in gowns and hairnets bent silently to their various tasks, the hush reverential. Clooney explained how it would work. Sunday, an envelope would arrive from Dublin with the other bid. That gave her all of today and tomorrow to inspect the property and the books. Fergal and Clooney would be available for any information needed on the equipment, the buildings, the herd, or the cheese itself. She put in a call to Trombley first and got him out of bed. A Dublin real estate agent was what they needed, she told him. He might try using the internet, get some recent sale prices for a property of similar size, with a large house in good condition, working farm attached. Any kind of farm, Gillian said.
Location?
Trombley said, yawning. I don't know exactly, to tell you the truth. Somewhere in West Cork. By when? Tomorrow, your noon, she said. Please and thank you. I'm assuming these monks of yours run a profitable cheese operation, he said then, awake enough to start worrying about her pressing tone of voice, about the impulsive quality of her request. They're not monks, Gillian said, finding again that Trombley's attentiveness made her irritable. Brothers is just the name of the farm, Brothers Farm. Pope's Own is the cheese. Trombley didn't care about any of this. He was waiting for his answer. I'm going through the books this morning, Gillian said, wanting off the phone. Of course, books were just paper on one level. This might have been her old job, the mental framing of reality through the manipulation of financial results. She sat at the table, frozen above this brocade of written entries and blueprint lines and legal descriptions of the property, wanting only to look up from the pages and out the window to the fields beyond the rose bushes. Really, she thought, what was there to say about a company that sold everything it made to the Vatican at a price negotiated 30 years before? Of course Brothers was losing money. All right, Gillian said, finding Clooney outside washing the Fiesta. I've had enough. Clooney put down his rag. So soon? He looked genuinely disappointed. Not enough of all this, Gillian said, waving her arms around her, aware that he might have taken her to be displeased with the farm itself, the cheese, the whole operation. I only meant all that. She motioned back to the house. Clooney scratched his chin. I see, he said. And so he found a pair of rubber boots for her in the Fiesta, and they walked for the rest of the day, from the big house up through the pasture to the ridgeline at the north end of the property, from there into the back meadow where the herd was grazing its way methodically towards an evening milking. From there, they followed a small stream to the low stone wall that marked the west side of the property, and this guided them south again to the creamery buildings, the paddock, the courtyard, and the big house. They had dinner in the big house. Fergal had gone, and they were in the hands of the brothers' septuagenarian housekeeper, Annie, who, if she was to be believed, cooked, cleaned, gardened, mowed the lawn, fixed the roof, and once chased off a prowler with a pair of hedge clippers. Annie had decided she liked Gillian. She served them lamb chops and roasted potatoes, then sat watching them eat, as if Gillian were someone whose arrival she had hoped for, anticipated for a long time. After dinner, Annie said only, "Well?" And Clooney nodded. She disappeared behind the kitchen door, where Gillian heard the scraping of crockery, a brief clatter of silverware, and then silence. They both stared at the door. When she reemerged, Annie carried a white plate, which she slid soundlessly onto the table. Gillian stared down at the small triangular cheese, maybe 7 inches aside. The rind was as orange as the sun had been that morning when she locked the house and turned to find Clooney out of the car, standing watching her. "Go ahead, love," Annie said. Gillian took the small knife and rotated the plate slowly. When the cheese was aligned with a corner facing her, she made two symmetrical cuts on either side of it and gently pulled free a diamond of cheese. She turned it on one side to see more clearly. It had the palest of yellow flesh. And horizontally, through the center of the paste, ran a capillary of royal purple. It was a startling contrast, making her wonder how the trace of purple had been introduced, but also drawing her eye to how the colors highlighted each other. The yellow somehow a greater promise for the blood-like residue, for the suggestion of prior despair. "It's beautiful," she said. "The sun on Easter morning, and the blood of the Irish saints," Clooney said with a small smile. "Is that what you think?" she asked him, cutting the piece into three smaller pieces. "Or is it the sun on Derby morning and the blood of the Republic?" Annie smiled and nodded. "Chekhov," she said. "And may I ask how he would have come to taste it?" Gillian asked, looking up at Clooney. He raised his eyebrows in friendly exasperation, then stared down fixedly at the cut Pope's own in front of them and said, "Will you be eating some of this blessed cheese, then?" She put it on her tongue, squeezing it, chewing it almost gingerly. It was full and savory, no sharpness or acridity, but tangy with the life that blossomed within it. She let the flavors swim through her for a moment. There was clover here, she thought, letting her eyes drift shut. There was the scent of broom, and a faint saline back breeze. Was that earthy undertone the purple vein, she wondered? The flavors carried her aloft to a point above the farm where all was visible and yet within her grasp. At once vertiginous and exhilarating. One might crash to earth from here or never touch down again. When she opened her eyes again, she was not particularly surprised to find Clooney and Annie watching her carefully. "Oh, my," she said eventually, embarrassed to find only those frail and grand motherly words. "Oh, my."
Bridget O'Sullivan is reading from Pope's Own by Timothy Taylor. It's from his latest collection, Secret Cruise, published by Vintage Canada. Next week, Gillian discovers the secrets behind both the making and the running of Brothers Farm. Coming up, more culinary indulgence courtesy of the American poet Phyllis McGinley. Her poem, Song of High Cuisine, is a lighthearted spoof of trends in gourmet foods. It's read by Catherine Disher.
Song of High Cuisine. Written upon reading in the New York Times that Bloomingdale's grocery department now offers stuffed larks from the region of Carcassonne, as well as one thrush from the French Alps. At Bloomingdale's, who would not wish to be? Where horned are the Gallic snails, where curls the anchovy? For palate stales as winter fails and rainy spring comes on. So they have birds at Bloomingdale's that flew in Carcassonne. Yes, hark, the lark at heaven's gate that lately sang so pure, there trussed and truffled for the plate invites the epicure. And, sheltering from the alpine wind, in more than alpine hush, arrives most elegantly tinned a solitary thrush. Ah, few the sails at Bloomingdale's amid imported straw, of tongues of foreign nightingales or pearls in Malaga. But they have many a merry thing. So, who'll go there to buy the little larks with parsleyed wing that speak so eloquent of spring, the single thrush that does not sing? Well, gentlemen, not I.
Song of High Cuisine, written by Phyllis McGinley and read by Catherine Disher. It's from The Love Letters of Phyllis McGinley, published by Viking Press. And that's all for this evening's program. Stay tuned now for the CBC Radio 1 News, followed by late night music from Winnipeg on Northern Lights.